This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on the show today, Ohio's track record on picking the president. Joining me first to talk about how cancer therapy can affect memory and thinking are adjunct assistant professor in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitation Medicine at the UC College of Medicine and a member of the UC Cancer and Gardner Neuroscience Institutes, Dr. Jonna DeVoto, professor of clinical pharmacy practice and the James L. Winkle College of Pharmacy and Oncology clinical pharmacy specialist at the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Jane Prumer, and UC College of Medicine professor emeritus of radiation oncology and adjunct professor of neurosurgery, Dr. John Brenneman. Dr. Brenneman's also medical director of the Cincinnati Children's UC Health Proton Therapy Center and associate director of the UC Brain Tumor Center. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jane, Jonna, and John, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure.
Jonna, how common is it for people who are undergoing cancer treatment to develop cognitive impairment?
It's a pretty common occurrence. The rates vary considerably based on when you measure it, how you assess it. If you look at studies, you can see numbers that range anywhere from 15 to 70%. Earlier in the process of going through treatment, the rates are higher. And so if you assess someone in the midst of chemotherapy versus someone who is 3 months out a year later, that in some ways explains some of the difference in the reported variability of the prevalence.
So why does this happen? I mean, what's the relationship between the cancer treatment and a decline in cognitive abilities?
Well, it comes really from a combination of factors. So in part, it's the cancer itself. It relates as well to treatments that are used, how many treatments are used. Relates to other factors as well, like mood and hormonal therapies and your cognitive status before you even have a diagnosis of cancer. So all of these things are factors that contribute to this perception of cognitive change that's pretty common.
Is there a difference between chemo and radiation in terms of the impairment?
Well, radiation is a type of a treatment that has a very focused effect. So chemotherapy, since it's usually given through the bloodstream, often can travel anywhere in the body, and can any type of tumor that you treat with chemotherapy, those drugs can potentially affect the brain. The radiation, when it's used, it has to be directed specifically toward the brain. So we usually see those effects only in people who have those types of tumors in the brain and head and neck area.
Mm-hmm. And how much of this is not just the treatment though, but the cancer itself, and maybe even the anxiety and the depression that can go with the disease?
Well, the cancer itself, you know, this is one of the areas that there needs to be a lot of ongoing studies, because this new interest in clarifying the role of inflammation and these inflammatory processes that are part of change that we see in lots of disease processes. So it's not just unique to cancer. We see it in diabetes and arthritis. And so we know this process is important to the development of cognitive change. And we even see cognitive decline in folks who have a diagnosis of cancer before they start treatment. And so this really encourages us to study this further, because we need good control groups where we can evaluate cognition before cancer treatment starts and then find those changes going forward to see how it changes going and at what rate things improve as time goes on.
Is it fair to say there are just so many factors that are in play that it's hard to get a handle on what's happening?
Well, there are a lot of factors, but there are certain types of therapies, and maybe Jane can talk some about, that are sort of known culprits for inducing cognitive change and also having impact on mood.
You're absolutely right in that many different chemotherapy drugs, some can have direct neurotoxic effects that may not be necessarily associated with cognition, but other drugs that have primarily been studied in the largest group, I guess, would be in women with breast cancer, that we know a variety of combination chemotherapy regimens have been reported to cause this chemo fog or chemo brain, mm-hmm. whatever you'd want to call it. And what we don't clearly understand is the exact mechanisms by which the chemotherapy causes this. You mentioned the inflammatory aspects, the different types of, we call them cytokines, that are released from normal cells within the body that can cause inflammation and changes in abilities for cognition. But also with breast cancer patients, because we oftentimes administer anti-hormonal therapies, we're not sure what is the effect of that also on causing this phenomenon. So, because oftentimes patients may be on both types of therapies.
So well, what are some of the signs that you should look for that tell you that somebody's suffering from chemo fog or chemo brain?
Jonna can answer that one.
It's funny because when folks come into clinic, they come for a lot of reasons. I tend to see individuals who have cancer history and treatment for things like breast cancer, non-primary tumors. And the reason and the timing of the referral for an evaluation can relate to someone's own perception that they're more easily confused or frustrated, some forgetfulness. Or family members expressing concern. And there can be things that trigger that concern, like a return to work or an attempt to return to work. I have folks who come in who are concerned that they now have cancer and a dementia. And so it's really important to clarify objectively what's actually changing. And when we look at what the sort of classic cognitive change in response to treatment, it's a pattern of decline that's different from what we see in Alzheimer's disease. It's a pattern that involves primarily the front part of the brain and also the subcortical areas. And I don't really want to talk about football today, but especially after yesterday, but it gives us maybe a model to think what, to understand what changes happen. If you think about a quarterback, right? Hard to think about today, but if you think about what a quarterback does, a quarterback, and this is what the frontal lobe does through these executive functions, you come in with a plan. That plan of what you want to do brings together multiple sources of information, right? In the moment, you've got your plan, but you can quickly respond to things that happen in your environment. You know what's important, and you can redirect and sort of refocus what you need to do. You also can know what to ignore. And then you implement that plan and translate that into action. So things like multitasking, sustained divided attention, processing speed, coming up with the right answer but doing it as fast as you're used to, what's sort of your norm. These are the kind of changes that are the classic cognitive changes relating to cancer treatment.
Now, how real is this? Is this something the patient's imagining, or is this actually a real change?
No, it's a very real thing. It's a very real change. But I think part of the process of going through an evaluation and mentioning concerns, you know, in some ways this whole discussion today is about our now broader focus on quality of life in cancer treatment, because folks are living and surviving, and the issues of quality of life and cognition fits well into that. Not only do you want to treat cancer and continue working and raising your family, and that's where these cognitive issues tend to surface. And so it's important to understand what really the difficulties are and what are the things you can do to compensate that, because what we really need is just time going forward. We have really the most data in breast cancer survivors, where if 30-40% of folks are showing declines from baseline after 6 weeks, half of those folks a year later have significant improvement. And, you know, some folks can have some sustained ongoing difficulties to a lesser extent going forward, but really time is definitely the element that can be the greatest benefit in these issues that relate to the treatment resolving or lessening.
But initially, how debilitating can this impairment be?
It can be quite debilitating, but in the context of right when the treatment is happening, it's not really a time to be critical about cognition, right? And so where we tend to see is when folks start getting back to a normal routine, or for some folks who are high functioning and want to work through their treatment. So it really sort of depends on what level of functionality you're striving for. There are some high functioning people that even a small decline that's noticeable to them is something that they have concern about, and then other folks. So there's quite a bit of variability, but it's a real change, and small changes in cognition can have a big impact on functioning in a day-to-day life.
How long does it typically last?
Well, there's a lot of variability, so it depends on a lot of other factors. But generally speaking, the farther you get from your cancer treatment, the improvement is visualized. And then there is a point where you kind of are at a more of a plateau in terms of having more benefit and having some sustained deficits. We can see that as well.
What do you tell patients who are concerned about this? How do you help them distinguish between what might be just normal forgetfulness and cognitive impairment that's being caused by their treatment?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, it's part of a collaboration that has to happen. And I think, John, maybe you can chime in on this as well, is we tend to sort of see things in separate camps. And I think part of our healthcare system forces us to do that because you have specialists for lots of different things. But really, it is more of an integrative approach. And so you have radiation oncologists who are conscious and concerned about cognitive change as well, and neuropsychologists and across the board who are all part of this discussion of not only treating cancer but doing so in a way that preserves quality of life and has a minimal effect as possible on cognition.
But you're right, it can be hard to distinguish when is somebody having a problem that isn't just normal. As we all get older, we all have these kinds of issues. And when is it actually due to something that can especially be reversible? So one of the things that John mentioned is this a new issue? Is this something that's just coming up now as you're going through treatment for cancer? But another thing that we can do is make use of the expertise here that John and her colleagues bring in terms of specialized testing, where they can really boil down to some of the real details of exactly what type of problem is being seen, and is this something that we can relate to the tumor or its treatment, or is this something, as you say, is more global, more nonspecific?
Well, and there's oftentimes, you know, last year we've had the conference. This Saturday will be our second time having the conference, and last year I presented a case of a woman who walked in and told me she thought for sure she had Alzheimer's disease, and we went through neuropsychological evaluation and tested memory and thinking and reasoning and attention and all of these different elements. And what we found was not only did she not have a dementia, she really had very, very minimal mild changes that we could possibly attribute to her cancer treatment. But what she had was severe depression that was not being addressed at all. And so the process of being forthcoming with your treatment team and your providers, it helps us identify all of these factors that can promote or really increase the perception of cognitive change. And depression is one of those elements. And so there's lots of factors that contribute, and sometimes it just takes a little effort to tease those things apart and treat the things that we know respond. And learn to compensate and adapt as we're kind of going forward.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Thanks to Lori Hobel Phillips for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and my guest this afternoon, as we talk about how cancer treatments can affect memory and thinking, adjunct assistant professor in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitation Medicine at the UC College of Medicine, and a member of the UC Cancer and Gardner Neuroscience Institutes, Dr. Jonna DeVoto, professor of clinical pharmacy practice in the James L. Winkle College of Pharmacy and oncology clinical pharmacy specialist at the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Jane Prumer, and UC College of Medicine professor emeritus of radiation oncology and adjunct professor of neurosurgery, Dr. John Brenneman. And Dr. Brenneman is also a medical director of the Cincinnati Children's UC Health Proton Therapy Center, and he's associate director of the UC Brain Tumor Center. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. John, does this have the same effect on children as it does on adults? Does it manifest itself the same way?
Yeah, children can absolutely be affected. the manifestation of it may be different in that these are children who often are going through the school experience, and so their difficulties show up in school performance, sometimes in interaction with their peers. But many of the tumors that are treated for children have been shown that that treatment can affect all of those types of functioning. Leukemia, brain tumors, which are the second most common type of tumor in children, all of those can have an impact on them.
Yeah, well, the topic that you're going to be discussing at the seminar on Saturday deals with the effects of radiation therapy on cognitive ability, and also proton treatment and the promise of protons in treating cancer. So can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, does proton treatment not have the same effect as some of the other cancer treatments?
Yes, well, when we're using radiation to treat a tumor in the brain, really one of the only things that we can do to help prevent problems is to keep the radiation away from the parts of the brain that don't need it and that we know can cause problems. So conventional radiation that uses X-rays has some ability to do that, but proton radiotherapy is a specific kind of radiation where it can really be steered and aimed and confined much, much better than the conventional X-rays. And so knowing that, again, that brain tumors are such a common type of a tumor for children, UC Health and Cincinnati Children's partnered a number of years ago to bring this proton therapy technology to the Cincinnati area. And in fact, we'll be treating our first patients next month.
So if it's more accurate, is it less likely to cause complications?
That's correct, yes. We can keep it away from parts of the brain that we don't want to expose but may have to unintentionally as we use other more common forms of radiation.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Kathy in Hyde Park. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. I just wanted to add, I had Herceptin added to my breast cancer treatment because I had a estrogen-positive tumor and also tested positive, the HER2-positive, you know, whatever. Because of that and the possibility of heart complications with the Herceptin, I was put on a beta blocker, really a very minor dose compared to what I see some of my elderly relatives on, and I felt like I was a zombie. I could not, I don't know how to function at all on this medication when they take it separately. It was carvedilol, and it just, it's terrible. I was so happy to get off that once the Herceptin discontinued, and I had to take it for another number of months to make sure that there had been no heart damage. And then for people who think that the chemo brain is going to last forever, I thought I was pretty with it through most of my chemo and following after, but I would have to say that things change exponentially. I'm 3 years out now, and even as short a time as 6 months ago, I can detect changes that I thought, oh, well, I was back to 100%, but I really wasn't. So hang in there.
Thank you, Kathy. We appreciate the phone call. And, you know, it's interesting she brings up, it's not just the cancer therapies, but she had some other conditions that were being treated along with it, that you know, she's taking a medication for the heart, and it causes the same issue as the cancer treatment.
It definitely causes some changes. Beta blockers that she had mentioned, the one medication, affect the body's ability to respond to natural endogenous substances that we make. And I know that patients who are placed on beta blockers for various reasons, for hypertension, other cardiac issues, post-MI, that sort of thing, will oftentimes report that they are more tired, they're a little sluggish, I haven't heard a lot of cognitive impairment reported with it, but it makes sense that as we respond less quickly.
If you're feeling a little sluggish, you're not going to be thinking as quickly.
Correct.
Yeah.
And many chemotherapy drugs can cause those same types of effects.
Jane, is there anything, are there any medications that can help you manage your way through the cognitive impairment that comes with cancer treatment? Is there anything out there yet?
Well, I think that Jonna mentioned a few things that have to do with other comorbid kind of conditions, things like depression and anxiety and fatigue and right now, I'm not aware of, you know, one unique drug that can definitely prevent this from happening in patients, but ensuring that other diseases are managed along with it is probably a very important concept for the patient. And I would always encourage patients to recognize that whenever they're being treated, we're always looking at risk versus benefits. And especially early on in the diagnosis of cancer, the benefits of getting treatment far outweigh, I believe most people would agree, any risks associated with cognitive impairment. But that's not to say that we shouldn't be addressing those issues. There have been some clinical trials looking at medications that have been used for attention deficit disorders that might be beneficial for some patients. Some of the medications that have been used for Alzheimer's disease or early dementia may offer some benefit. But in the absence of large-scale clinical trials, these medications will not be used across the board at this time.
Jenna, I think that some simple strategies, though, you have notepads, post-it notes, calendars and things like that can help a person manage their way through this.
Right. You know, there are a lot of things, you know, we look at sometimes simpler is better, right? And so where we tend to see frontal declines, these cognitive deficits be most noticeable is when folks are trying to do more than one thing at the same time. So multitasking and when you're used to doing that, the whole notion of doing one thing at a time can feel quite simplistic, but there really is some wisdom to that. We also talk a lot about you have to allow more time than you think you're going to need to do something. And so when there's slower processing speed, when it takes you longer, you can do it, but it just takes you longer. One of the greatest ways is to just allow more time than you think you're going to need to do things. You don't want to make everything in your life a memory test either. And so when you're going to the grocery and scheduling your day, there is nothing wrong with keeping notes and taking...
Are you saying give yourself a little slack through
absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. I have a black book, which I actually did not bring today, that's really sort of the old school schedule book. And when people see it, they, but it, you know, the joke in my family is that it's my external frontal lobe and I rely on that little black book very often for details. And, you know, we say that a lot when I'm evaluating folks. Don't make every day, every task and thing that you need to do a memory test. Use repetition. Use reminders. Be kind and forgiving to yourself and those around you. And be willing to ask for and receive support, love, and encouragement from the people that care about you.
Let's talk with Michelle in Fort Mitchell. Good afternoon, Michelle.
Oh, hi. I was calling because about 3 years ago, my son Patrick was diagnosed with leukemia and is currently being treated at my children's, and they just do such an amazing job. But I just wanted to call in and ask, we hear a lot that later when his treatment's finished, there may or may not be neurocognitive side effects. And it's all very vague. Some kids have problems, some kids don't. But what are the kind of things that you can do to treat that if a child should have some sort of, you know, deficit or, like, slowness? What's offered out there?
Well, the thing that I think has the most promise at this point is in cognitive training. And there are actually a lot of efforts going on right now in children's oncology to use that proactively in children who are going through treatments that may have some impact on their functioning. And there are some software programs out there now that are being tested proactively to see what kind of impact they're going to have. But I think that the advice that I give parents and their children as they're going through these types of treatments is to make sure that when they are doing things in their free time, make sure they're doing active things. I think one of the things that doesn't help necessarily is to sit down in front of the television and absorb things. If you're doing things that actually you have to engage in, even playing video games, but especially reading, doing sports, many things exercise. Like that, that can, I think, really, I think we're going to see that that's going to have the ability to make some impact here.
So mental and physical activity.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things where you sort of have to navigate some of the other things that are associated with cancer treatment, fatigue and some of those elements. But it's sort of based on a cardiac rehab model where we know aerobic exercise is actually something that can help improve executive functioning and frontally mediated tasks. And so it's that balance, that lifestyle balance, diet, sleep. We're going to have folks talk about sleep at the conference on Saturday, and also a pediatric neuropsychologist is going to join the conference on Saturday and talk about the impacts of treatment on children. But it's that full regime of healthcare and wellness, really moving more toward an integrated model of treating and coping with cancer.
John, what are the hours for the seminar?
The seminar is this Saturday morning, and the registration starts at 8 o'clock. The conference schedule is from 8:30 to 12:30. And if people are interested in registering, they can either call 558-2030, or they can email Kelly Hummel, that's kelly.hummel@uc.edu. And the conference will be held at the Kingsgate Marriott on the UC campus.
Yeah, and you can find a link to that information at wvxu.org as well. And thanks to all of you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Adjunct assistant professor in the Department of Neurology and Rehabilitation Medicine at the UC College of Medicine and a member of the UC Cancer and Gardner Neuroscience Institutes, Dr. Jonna DeVoto, professor of clinical pharmacy practice in the James L. Winkle College of Pharmacy and oncology clinical pharmacy specialist at the UC Cancer Institute, Dr. Jane Prumer, and UC College of Medicine professor emeritus of radiation oncology and adjunct professor of neurosurgery, Dr. John Brenneman. Coming up, we'll talk about the role Ohio voters could play in this year's presidential election. And in Focus on Technology, Cincinnati soccer players are the latest test group for an anti-concussion device. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.